Welcome to A Writer in Italy, the podcast. I am your host, Michelle Johnston, and this is a little share in the world of travel, books, art, and lifestyle. I live in Australia, yet have long had an attraction to the Mediterranean countries for as long as I can remember. This inspiration has fueled my creative life and given me incredible joy over the years as an artist and a writer. And that is why I have created these shares on journeys that have been made, books that I have loved, and cooking adventures inspired by wonderful food writers. You can find all show notes at michellejohnston.life and follow me on Instagram at A Writer in Italy, where you can find all of the meanderings and indeed the lure of Italy as the ultimate muse. Thank you for joining me. I love having you here for the journey of Muse Italia. Welcome back to the podcast. About 25 years ago, Bob and Gudrun Quillo were looking for a place to buy in Capri, Italy, not far from Benevento near Naples, where Bob had family ties to the region. The Capri property fell through, and the next thing they found themselves driving in Tuscany and talking to friends when they were introduced to a 1,500-year-old ancient Borgo in Rada in Chianti that might be up for sale. A week later, they were the owners of medieval Casalvento, a hamlet of land and historic buildings that were abandoned in 1953. Bob and Gudrun didn't even realize there was a vineyard, and on the ground were vines of Chianti Classico. Bob and Gudrun's fate was sealed, and the next 20 years or so were spent restoring the vineyard, the olives, and the Borgo, amongst other projects in their busy and creative lives. Later, they purchased more land close to Casalvento, a medieval hamlet called Livornano, and onwards they went. Today, I introduce you to Gudrun Quillo and her book of fiction, Casalvento, House of the Wind. If you love a book set in Italy and heart thudding, more palpitations set in the beautiful rolling hills of Tuscany, but not just Tuscany, that Italian ideal, the Italian beauty Chianti, one of the oldest settlements, ancient Rada. And if you love a little romance and travel and Italian history and a story that makes you want to jump on a plane, well, as soon as possible, well then, Casalvento, House of the Wind, is a book to escape with wherever you are in the world. Gudrun's estate these days makes award-winning wines, Chianti Classico, Chianti Riserve, those gorgeous Super Tuscans, and much, much more. You can also stay and sip at your own leisure, do cooking classes and wine tours, but mostly, if you are intrigued, you can visit her website, livornano.it, and follow Gudrun on Instagram at livornano_Casalvento_. Or just listen along and enjoy Gudrun's story about the vines and the writing journey and the surprising and wonderful process of becoming a fiction author, something she turned to at a time of grief and loss. You can find her book, Casalvento, House of the Wind, at the usual places. And please don't mind the lashings of rain in the early part of this podcast. It only lasts for about 5 minutes. Enjoy this conversation, and thank you, Gudrun, for sharing your story here at A Writer in Italy podcast. Welcome, Gudrun, to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for having me.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to hearing all about your debut novel and your winery and what inspired you to write your book. But can we start with sharing with the audience how you found yourself living in Tuscany and restoring an ancient Borgo and what made you move to Italy?
Okay, so question number one. My husband was the second youngest and 7 children born in the Bronx from Italian immigrants. And they came from Naples and Benevento. And my husband always made it a dish for him saying that if he would make it from the rag to the riches, that he would go back to Italy and buy himself a property. And we were supposed to buy something in Capri because that's the area where, you know, basically he came from Naples. This deal, unfortunately, did not go through. And or the rag, fortunately, did not go through. And we afterwards went and took a road trip and came up to Tuscany to visit some friends. At one of the wineries that we visited to taste the wines, the winemaker was telling us that there is a property that is not for sale, but the owner has passed away. And the wife wanted to move back to Switzerland. And that was on a Sunday. On Monday, we came onto Casalento's property, met the lady. At 11 o'clock, at 1 o'clock, we had a handshake, and on Friday in the same week, we exchanged the money in Lake Como. That basically went extremely fast. And and we owned the property. And then, you know, the contractors come in, go through all of the bits and pieces when we buy something new. The house was not in a very good shape. It's over 1,000 years old, and it was not really at our standard of living. So when all the people were in place of redoing the house and the permissions were there, we went back to the United States. In 6 months into the construction of Casalento, we received a phone call from a lawyer in Florence that our property Casalento came with 6.5 hectares of Chianti Classico rights. At the beginning, we did not fully understand what that meant, but the property had rights to plant grapes, and there were not vineyards on Casalento's property. At that time, you were able to sell the rights to a neighboring estate, and they could take then those rights and start planting grapes. Honestly, we thought to ourselves, why not try to talk to those people, and we will go and plant on our property, and they will run Casalento, the vineyards. But into all of the exploration work and planting, choosing the grapes, planting the vines, and the process, you know, it was over 3 years just with the excavation work alone, because you have to boil the soil, you have to dig up to 2.5 meters deep, and we are on the Albarese stones, so there's huge stones, and they have to be smooshed and made into small gravel, and different layers of dirt comes on top of it, and it was just very intriguing how to see all of this, you know, developing. And in 2000, we planted, and 2004 was our first vintage on Casalento. And I got so intrigued by doing that. Even my husband, you know, was saying, why don't you try to get involved and, you know, let's go and run Casalento on our own without anyone else's input from a different farm. And that's what we did. So we hired an agronomist, we hired an oenologist, and with those two and me together, we developed Casalento to the brand where it is today. A lot of things in the meantime have changed. We no longer have an agronomist or an oenologist. We do everything in-house. We, after our first vintage in 2004, fermentation and the winemaking was done in our garage, and it was just too messy, so we decided that we have to build the wine cellars, we build the wine cellar in Casalento. And during all of this process, a neighboring estate came up for sale, and that was Livanano. So we purchased Livanano in 2000. It was an abandoned town. The last family left Livanano in 1953. There were vineyards planted. One house was actually already rebuilt. But then when we came in, we went to the archives of Siena and looked up what the town looked like in the ancient times. And we were able to rebuild one house after another. So we that had adjacent walls. The rules here are very different. And you cannot just build a house. You know, you have to have some walls, ancient walls, and then you can rebuild it. And we did. So we rebuilt 5 homes, the church, and now Livanana houses our guests. We are a hotel and a bed and breakfast in the ancient town of Rada in Chianti.
Oh, beautiful. So when you moved to Italy, were you always imagining that you'd be at a winery, or did it just evolve that way and the grapes were there? So
And I don't live full-time in Italy. I'm an American citizen, so you know, I live mainly in the United States. But I come here during the summertime, during the wintertime, originally from Austria, so I'm traveling a lot. I'm in a lot of different places. I never honestly imagined anything like that. It just evolved. It like one step at a time. You don't go and say, oh, I want to have a winery or I want to have this. It just all came together. And I realized that the nature and the surroundings of rolling hills of Chianti and the people around, it's just a very beautiful place to wake up in the morning. You forget time. It's timeless here.
It's beautiful. Just got a little peek out your window and saw the roses in bloom and the cypress in the background. Yeah. And the view that you have out your window right now is the same image that's on the cover of your book. So
yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your book and the title and what made you write a book set in Chianti?
As the name of the book is Casalvetto, and Casalvetto means House of the Wind. And I am on the top of a hill. I'm about 650 meters high, actually one of the highest altitudes here in Chianti for the winemaking. What made me write a book? So there is a bit of a sad story to it, because my husband was diagnosed with dementia and Alzheimer, and then ended up also having Parkinson's disease. And as anybody know, being a caretaker is very, very difficult, and you start to become very lonely. And I always wrote, you know, short stories. I wrote every day the images that I have, you know, when I do the wine tours, when we meet all the different people. And my mother came up with the idea saying, you know, why don't you just go and write a book? You know, it's easier said than done. But I put my mind and my soul and heart into this, and I created these characters. And it starts out in New York, and then she ends up inheriting a winery in Tuscany, not knowing about her history. There is a twist to the testamento, to the will, that she has to live in Italy for 5 months to find out who she was, where her grandparents came from, where her family roots came from. And she falls in love not only with the area, but also with the winemaker and with the caretaker of the property. So in the beginning, I create these characters. And then 10 chapters into these characters, I realized that I am actually reflecting myself in the book. And the book with the Erica became more and more Gudrun. So I embedded all of my experiences in the book. So the book not only has a story of a life change, but also it gives you a bit of the language, the history of Chianti Classico, of Tuscany, the ancient city of Rado, Florence with the history, Siena with the history. Then comes in the winemaking, what is the grape of the Chianti Classico, is the Sangiovese, what does Chianti Classico mean? And also, before I met my husband, I didn't know how to boil an egg. And now I love to cook. I learned how to cook. And all of this is in there. There's recipes at the end. I think you can call it, it's a book of wishful thinking. All of the things that I was lacking or missing, having a husband who was so ill next to you, you just express yourself with your emotions. And I think all of this is reflected in the book. So it made me really happy writing it. I felt so comfortable, and I fell into this writing process where I wrote every day for 5 hours, and I set the alarm on my phone. And when the time was up, the 5 hours, I did not have nothing to drink and nothing to eat. I didn't even go to the bathroom. I was so involved in the character of Erica. It was very hard sometimes to get back to reality, to your daily routines, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I really enjoyed how you were weaving through the history and the grape season and like you said, the detail of the Sangiovese 80% and Chianti Classico. And you created many layers of a woman who's changing and growing and evolving mm-hmm. as well. And I thought that was really beautiful. I started to wonder, and it's great to hear you talk about the fact that she's a little bit of a mirror of you. And obviously it's not the whole story of your story, but I sense there was elements of that. I found that really beautiful, but it's also really beautiful that you've said it at your estate, and that place has such meaning for you, and you can feel it in the book. I did feel that real connection to the land and that journey that your character Erica took. And I thought, well done, you know, like just in the sense that you got to channel that and make peace with all of those, or make peace with that journey that you're on as well, because it turns out there was a silver lining in there for you by the sounds of it. Would I be right?
Absolutely, absolutely. My husband was such an eager businessman, and working and running from one place to another. We lived in New York and in Palm Beach, Florida, where I still reside. I was just like in the back of him constantly, and we were moving one day here, doing the Broadway shows, doing the theater. We owned the theater in Palm Beach. He was very much involved with the arts, but mainly, you know, he made his business in the car industry. But I was not myself. It was not the good one. And I honestly believe that I lost myself in this world. And when we came and when we bought this property here, you know, you smell the roses, and shopping was not important. You wanted to be outside. You wanted to be in the garden. You wanted to walk down through the vines, touch the grapes. Every sunset here is different. And in the morning when you wake up, the smell and the birds and the crickets, it's, you know, for maybe for some people it's an annoying noise, but for me it's like the music of the earth. And when you go to bed in the evening as a house of the wind, Casalento, in the afternoon, around 5 o'clock, we have the waves going through of the wind. And then suddenly at 9 o'clock, everything stops. The wind stops, the crickets don't, it's like silent, silencium. And you are sitting outside, you know, you're looking at the garden, you see the sunset, the cypress trees, the smell of flowers, the different flowers, the herbs that you have around you. My hedges are rosemary hedges. You know, I sometimes just think to myself how much money people pay for, you know, 6 leaves of rosemary. Mm. And here I have hedges of rosemary. It is just absolutely great. And the other thing, what I find, which is makes me tear up, all the people that live on my property or are working at Livanano, we are now in the second generation with the family who is here and with the girl who works in my house, 23 years since the beginning. We are a family. It's not an I team. It's a we team. And I have to give credit to everybody around me because they help me grow. And they helped me become to who I am now. And I feel so much better with myself, and I feel happy when I wake up in the morning. I don't have any children, so the vines are my children, and my people around me, that's my family.
Oh, wow. There's so much in everything you just said, and what a joy to have that, because it's just knowing that that's the connection for you, is to have that kind of family. And it honestly, like, that's a beautiful life, isn't it? Like, even if you choose not to have children or whatever the reason, if you have a creative life, your spirit is always evolving in that. And it's such a beautiful world to live in, and the connection to the seasons in the garden and everything, and to see that every day. And I was thinking before when you talked about the garden and how you can walk out and touch those rosemary hedges and see the roses. I mean, once you get a taste of that world, you cannot go back. Nature is such a balm, and the healing spirit of being out in the vines and all of that. Like, I have a garden here myself, and I know that that is always where I kind of find my peace again. And even though sometimes it's a lot of work and you're always like, oh, I better do this or I better do that. But ultimately those jobs, they're so fulfilling as well, because you always feel really grounded again and you feel like you've done something good for the day. And like you said, you know, you get to see it all. So it's magical. You get to also enjoy the bounty that's there as well. And so you also have an organic farm or something. Is that right?
Yes, yes, yes. We are organic. We are organic. So our vineyards are organic. Our hotel has to serve organic food because we are organic. But I want to say one more thing prior to that.
Yeah.
When my readers are going to go and read the book, Erica is cooking in the kitchen, sitting outside, eating with Paolo there, and that is actually, that really exists. So my kitchen is there. She eats every night with Paolo. This is actually where I wrote the book. So I was always sitting outside, overlooking the garden with my computer, because I write with a fountain pen on a piece of paper first, and then the next day I put everything into my computer. It was just an amazing, an inspiration that all of the words that just came out, like a ghost in me that was writing it. And it was just so amazing of the feelings that overcame when I started to write this. So now going back into with the organic part, Casalvento, when we were building the wine cellar, we had 2 acres of a vegetable garden. We have very strange laws here. So we have on the top of the hill, there's a church. Next to the church, we have another vegetable garden that grows the vegetables, and fruit trees and truffle trees are up there and serves for the hotel. So it's like they go shopping here on Casalvento side. In Casalvento here, my house right in front of my kitchen, next to the area where you sit outside, is also a garden where, and I cook out of the garden. So that's whatever the garden gives me, I cook in the evening. What a lot of people don't know is that the winemaking part and growing the grapes, you're at the mercy of the gods, because we cannot irrigate. The laws have now lightened a little bit, but in the old days, Chianti Classico was not allowed to be irrigated. And so the grapes, they have their roots going down very, very deep, around 3 meters, and they take their soil, they take their water from the roots down during the summertime.
Wow.
And this year especially was a very difficult year because we had very little rain during the winter, and then in the spring it started to rain. It was, oh my God, it was cold, it was rainy, and we had hail. So a lot of people around lost already maybe 20% or 30% of their crop in the beginning of the year. Sangiovese grape is a very sensitive grape. It's the first one to bloom and the last one to pick. It takes a very long time to maturity. So, you know, from that period, you are, you know, you hope for the rain to come, but not too strong. You hope for the sun, the dry season during the summertime, so that the grapes grow and the alcohol, the sugar, the sweetness, the ripeness comes through it. That means that you need to have a temperature change of 10 to 15 degrees during the daytime and the nighttime. Ultraviolet, infrared, the position of how the vineyards have been positioned are very, very important. In October, when we start harvesting our grapes and everything is done by hand, this is the most joyful time at all, when all the people are in the fields cutting like crazy, putting the grapes on the tractor, going to the cantina, and then the crushing process starts, then the fermentation process starts. So when you're organic, you know, the fermentation is, you don't add any yeast, so it takes a little bit longer because it takes the yeast from the skin of the grapes. So the fermentation doesn't take 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes it can take up to 2 months. So all of this is a very interesting and very intriguing process. So first we have the first step where you are saying, you know, we hope for a good year in the field because there's nothing that we can do. And then the second part is when the grapes are crushed and the juice and fermentation becomes alcohol, and alcohol becomes into something very sensitive, making it into the best wine that you can make.
What a delicate balance this whole process is. Where I live, there are vineyards not far away. There's a bit of wine country as well. And we have quite delicate seasons. And I know exactly what you're talking about, with all that hail would have just done so much damage to that early budding. And
Yes. It
just must be like, you know, you're at the mercy of the weather all of the time. And so are you actually in a drought at the moment, or you've just had all that rain? So
Right now for us, so I am in a very healthy situation at the moment. Number one, because of my altitude that I'm so high. And number two, that we did our excavation work up to 2.5 meters down. So our wood stocks are very, very cheap. Grapes, the vines, are like children. You know, if you start giving them water or giving them candy, they want to have one more candy.
So yes.
My vines are used to not getting water, so they have to work very, very hard to take the water from the ground. So because of the rain, there's quite a bit of water inside the land. Yes, it looks very dry when you look at it, but the vines, the rows are beautiful, luscious, and green. Development at the moment is very good on Casalento, also on Livanano's side. Livanano is 100 meters less than Casalento. Very interesting also is that Chianti, Tuscany, is very large in its region. Chianti Classico is its own little region. And we have, as I said, mainly the Sangiovese grape, but also the differences in the soil. So just 15, 20 minutes from here is Castellina, the next town, and they are dropping right down to 200 meters in altitude. So their grapes from Castellina, 20 minutes to Rada, which is the ancient town of Chianti Classico, you would not even understand the difference of those 200 and 600 meters would make in the tasting of the wines. Casalento is very much, and Livanano's winery is very much inclined to make sure that our wines are made in such a way that when you open up the bottle, when the wine is finished, the Chianti Classico or the Transelezione or the Chianti Classico Reserva, that the genie of Tuscany comes out of the bottle. So where you can taste the herbaceousness of the grape, where you can smell the berries, a hint of tobacco, all of what Tuscany gives, the wine is not over-oaked. We ferment in infra, in clay, in many different ways, some also in steel. Very much into going back into how the old days of the people were making wine. A lot of people remember Chianti as the straw bottle, as the fiasco. And sophistication from that time to now is tremendous. We have grown so much in our winemaking process. We're also when the Super Tuscan came out, because the Super Tuscan is a wine that the vintners invented. The winemaker or the owner could put their own signature into the wine, because Chianti Classico, you are after the rule of the Chianti Classico Consortium. So as you said, they have the 80% Sangiovese, 20% of Cabernet or Merlot or whatever you have going on the property, you know, you can put in there. So it's a very, very complex. Chianti has grown tremendously in the winemaking, and we are in one of the top five ranks in the wines when you go to the Wine Spectator or Decanter, especially the ancient city of Rada, which was one of the first towns of the Chianti Classico in Chianti. So it's very interesting how that works.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's so interesting to hear your story and where you are at elevation and how that affects the taste of your particular wine, because your wine has won awards as well. Is that right?
Oh, my God, yes. My husband always said in his day of age, he doesn't buy green bananas anymore. So everything has to be perfect. And we made sure that we had the right with the wine cellar. We built the wine cellar around our property. So all the beds that we have in there are designated to some parts of the winery outside. If the year is not good, we don't make a wine. We do the fermentation. Part of it we send to Modena, and they make balsamic vinegar out of it for us that we then use for Livanano himself. When the year is great and we send our wines into the ratings, we always are one of the top. So we always end up with 92, 97. Our town selection 2015 just won best wine of Tuscany. The Janus, our Super Tuscan, is 92 points in the Wine Spectators. I mean, the rating is great, but I always to the listeners, I believe that it's also important your personal taste of what you like. So I don't really make the wine, you know, for it to be for the guides. I make the wine for the consumer, for the end consumer, and for myself, because I also would like to drink a good wine, and I want to love my wine when I drink that. You know, we all have different tastes. Some, you know, people like more Cabernet, full-bodied wine. Some people like Pinot Noirs, you know, it's like, or like the white wines and like this. So it's your personal taste, the personal reference. But it is important, yes, to be rated and to, you know, so we have to send our wines in, and every time when we get an order from Japan, we know exactly we want something because they're the first ones to find out.
That's
you know,
great.
When you win something, it's fun.
Yeah. Oh, so what do you like to drink?
I like my wine with food. It's every different. I mean, I'm not very much alcohol forward with wine. I like more fruity wine. So I prefer the Chianti Classico. I love the Gran Selezione that we have, which is 100% Sangiovese. And Sangiovese grape is very close to, I would say, to the Pinot Noir varietal. I like that a lot. In Livanano, we also grow Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and Cuvée Straminer. So I make a white wine called L'Anima, that means the soul. And that is a wine that I like in the afternoon, you know, to if you want to have a sip of a glass of wine. I enjoy it a lot. So, yes.
Well, it sounds great to me.
My preferences, yeah.
I do prefer a Sangiovese. Yeah, I do too. I really love wine. I like to enjoy wine regularly. And I think it's one of those good things in life. If you get the right balance, it is very good.
Yes, I think so too. I think it's so nice the end of the day when you're finished your work and you're tired and, you know, your brain, your body, whatever, it depends what you have done because every day is different and you sit outside and then you go and say, let's go and open up a nice bottle of Chianti and then you sit out there and there are other things. But I want to share with the listeners, it was the most high that I ever had when I was going to a restaurant and not knowing that they had my wines and we were going looking through the wine list. And then there was, oh, and I said, my God, there's my wine, Chianti Classico Casalvento. I said, we must try the bottle. So it was the first time that I was looking at the waiter who was opening up this bottle of wine. And I was like really wanting to tell him that I made this wine for the party for two. It sounds kind of funny. But at the end, you know, we did tell the waiter that I'm the owner of the property. And it was quite neat. I love it. And I love to do the wine dinners in the States to talk about the properties between Livanano and Casalvento. And yeah, I love to do the wine tours. We have no idea what kind of people come through the door and you can show them around. Give them the tour through the cantina, tasting the different wines. And then through the pictures in the back, they find out that they just got served by the owner and everybody's so happy and great. They want to take pictures with you. So it's really rewarding. And the smile, they have the people smile on their faces when they like it, when they tell you what they taste and why they like this wine. And we are one of the youngest wineries around, with the highest ratings, and I'm one of the 10 best wineries of Chianti. So it's we have to do a lot of wine tours because when people go on TripAdvisor and booking, you know, what to do when visits, rather, you know, Casavento always pops up under the first three. And it's really rewarding. So,
oh, it sounds fabulous. Yeah. It sounds absolutely wonderful to have that and to have that moment at the restaurant. And, oh, it would have been like just bursting.
Yes, it was great, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you give the waiter something to drink and then the sommelier came out and, you know, he was tasting the wine. And so it's very, very great. I love it.
Yeah. Like it. Oh, you're in the right place. So,
yeah, I love that I can share the wine with other people. So that's great.
That is the peak experience of a beautiful wine, though. It's sharing it. Yeah. Absolutely. So tell me about what's next then, because I think I listened to the podcast the wine podcast that you're on, the Italian wine one, and I recall that you are working on a second book. So is this a follow-up?
Yes, it is. The first book is basically about Erica changing her life from living the escalate stuff of the high society and thinking that she has her perfect life into Tuscany, and then falling in love and seeing what life is all about. And I cannot tell the rest. They have to read it. So the second book, more about the winemaking, the intrigues of jealousy, you know, when you make something good and you win great awards. I will embed a lot of what my experiences was in this year with the seasons. First book was the season from the spring to the fall, and the second book also starts out from the spring to the fall. So it's in the same time period. And at the end, there's going to be a bit of a twist. I can't tell too much because otherwise, you know, you will know what was written in the first book. So you have to be surprised. And then at the end, I would like to introduce the Inspector Mauro, and then I would like to write like short slides, like not in a criminal mind per se, too scary kind of thing, but I would like to write like 10 series with Inspector Mauro, who is coming to light in Casalvento, and then he, you know, little things are going to happen around the miners and whatnot, and Inspector Mauro comes in and solves the mystery, the issues, and yeah.
Oh, that sounds really
that's
exciting.
That's my project.
Isn't it great to have a writing project? It's the best fun. It's so much fun in the middle of it when you're like just loving waking up every day and getting back to it, I think.
I think the funny thing is when I write outside and I have my glass of wine, I write with music and the music is very loud. I number the pages, you know, and then the next day I'm sitting there and I said, oh my God, this is, where did you come up with that story? Where did you come up with that? I amaze myself. And then, of course, you know, you put it in a computer, you add something. When you finish the book, you start it from the beginning again and you change something again. So it takes a while. I always say, like, writing a book is like giving birth 9 months, I think.
I agree.
It took me. And then I go back and then you make changes. You need to make sure that you follow up. So you have, like, you know, yellow sticky pads everywhere. But you don't forget what you have to put in the next chapter, what you have said in the beginning, the characters and all of that, so that there is the flow, that is like the rainbow of the story is in there, that everything is consistent. First language, of course, is German, it's not English. But I decided to write in English, number one, because it's a global language. Number two, I think it's much easier to write in English than it was in German for me. German is more of a harder kind of language, and English is so easy in the way of how you can express yourself. There are not that many words and not many, you know, times. It's also for, you know, the Italians to read, or a foreigner to read this book. I think it's very easy, and I have my own style of writing published. Michelle, I never thought, number one, getting, you know, writing a book was an easy part. Getting it published, it was, you know, quite of a story, but it happened so fast and I got so lucky. And when it was released on the 6th of June, I could not believe it that I achieved the bestseller in Italian literature category, in romance literature fiction, in general Italy travel guide, single woman fictions, small town and wall fiction, and historical Italian fiction and travel adventure fiction. I was like, are they talking about my book? I know I had a story and I had something to tell, but I was absolutely amazed. And then I got addicted to Amazon's, you know, people were writing their thoughts of the reviews.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody said to me, yeah, you could really have to have a thick skin because they're going to go and say this and this and this. And no, I was like, oh, my God, this one lady was writing. That was so cute. She said, I've never been outside of the United States, but while reading this book, I was looking up at the same time how expensive airline tickets are to go to Italy, to Tuscany, and that she wanted to go as soon as possible. Oh. And the other lady was like saying that she was so falling in love with Erica, the area, that she went out and bought a bottle of Chianti and some balsamic vinegar and olive oil and tried the recipes that was at the end in the evening. While she was reading the book. I mean, I'm like, That's why I got addicted. I was like reading. I was like, oh my God. So that's amazing. Of course, you know, there's people who gave it maybe 2 stars, but at the end, they always say it's a recommendable book to read. You know, I would recommend to buy it. We all have opinions, thank God. And, you know, we're not all the same. So we have our own fingerprints on everything.
The stories that you read will give you so much joy over time. Like, just you hold on to those good ones and you just be like, you know, some women were moved to go out and cook, to buy Chianti, to even explore the idea of traveling when they've never done that before. And I think that is the miracle and the beauty of Italy. Like, when people read about, you know, what you've got there and what you've explored and how you've layered your story of Florence and Siena and Rada and Castellina and all those beautiful places, like, they are just, they're waiting. They're waiting for people to discover it, but they can also read your book and discover it too. And I think there's so many layers to that. And that's what I find so fascinating, because I recently read a whole bunch of books. Like, I spent about 24 days and I read a book practically every day as an experiment. Yeah. And they were mostly nonfiction. But what blew me away was purely having these conversations with women on Instagram who were seeing what I was reading. And over that time, it just enlightened me how Italy is like a bit of a magic pill, and that when we read about places in Italy, and particularly Tuscany, but all of Italy really, people just find it so spiritually uplifting. These conversations I was having, like, people were just saying to me, oh, I just buy anything in travel on Italy. Like, I just love it. And this conversation was repeated. I've been thinking about that ever since. And so I absolutely understand those readers of yours that felt that and that were so evolved in the story and the landscape and the experience and the journey of your protagonist. And I think that is why we read, you know, we want that connection, we want that feeling, and we want to grow with the character and feel that full circle moment and the love and that, oh, all of that journey. I just think it's fascinating, and it continues to amaze me, because I admit that's how I fell in love with Italy. It was through writing. It was through reading memoir. And it's just been something that's woken up in me even more, because I thought it was just me. I thought it was just me wanting to read about, you know, like Frances May's books and all that and reread them again and again. I was falling in love with the art and the architecture and the history and the people and the food and the wine, and it just kept on going. And I was always like, I just loved listening to these stories again and again as well, like on audio. I don't know, there's just something a little bit magical about it. So I imagine your book is going to continue to flourish and continue to invite people to come to your beautiful world that you've created with your husband over all that time. And I think that magic is all there. And I saw it through your window this just before when you showed me the view, and the view out your window is on the book cover. And I'm just like, there's something very special about that. And I don't know what the word is exactly, but there's a little bit of magic there. And, you know, everyone needs a little bit of magic every now and then. So congratulations. And what I would love you to do before we finish today, if you have time, is just to read a little excerpt and share a little bit of the book with us.
Well, okay. I'm not very good at reading out loud, I must tell you, I must admit, but I will try to read slow and not to swallow my W's. Okay, so at the beginning, I would like to start out with the prelude. And that's how I felt and how I feel, and that's what I think life and love can do to you. Sometimes the angels lay a pathway on vertigo, and it can lead to something high. They bring with them fate. You can feel the angels, they come together. They come to you, and both of you start to shine. And both of you start to swing, first with the look that bonds you, then with the closeness of the body, the mind, and the soul. You can feel the beat of the heart. You can feel the heart the heat that brings the body to life. You start to swing. You can hear the strings playing softly on the instrument, the song of unity and love, the song lingering in the air. And that's what you feel in the evening when you're alone with your glass of wine and you just close your eyes and you say, thank you. Thank you, God, for letting me live this life. And now to the fourth. Okay. It was late the next afternoon when she got a text from Tots. On my way to JFK, we'll leave Berlin Saturday morning and arrive in Florence at midday. James will arrive from Frankfurt 1 hour later. I can't wait for him. Please let me know who will pick us up. Thank you, darling. Love, hugs, and kisses. She couldn't wait to see them, and the weather was so gorgeous, they would never want to leave. She called the cantina, the wine cellar, to ask for Paolo. Ciao, Paolo. Remember that I told you some of my friends will be coming soon? Well, they will arrive on Saturday in Florence. Is there someone that can pick them up? Of course, Erica. Santo will do that. Do you have the arrival information? She read him the details and added, please make sure he has a sign with Casavento on it. No problem. I'll take care of it. Have a nice evening, Erica. Suddenly, Erica thought of her grandfather's second letter. Before she could second guess herself, she said, Paolo, if we have anything planned for tonight, do you want to join me for dinner? Maybe even help me prepare it? Oh, you're cooking tonight? Yes. What are you making? Erica suddenly realized what she had said. She had no idea what to make or even if she could prepare a meal. Before she could say anything, though, Paolo went on, it doesn't matter. I'll be there at 6. Paolo, 7 would be better. Okay, 7 then. Ci vediamo fra un po'. Ciao, she answered and quickly answered Todd's text. Then there was the question of how to make dinner. She had made pasta with Doris' sauce, but never prepared a whole meal on her own. Her cooking lessons hadn't progressed that far. She obviously needed some help. Ah, here you are, Doris, Erica said as she went down to the kitchen. I was just on the phone with Paolo and invited him for dinner, but I'm afraid I told him I was cooking. And Doris laughed out loud. Okay, so what are you thinking of making? Oh, I have no idea. What do you think? Can you help me? Well, I was planning on making pasta fagioli for dinner. Remember the dish? I already soaked the beans overnight. It's easy to make and Paolo likes it. Come on, we can do the rest together. Erica got on the apron, turned on some music, poured herself a glass of wine, and smiled at Doris. I'm ready. Where do I start? First, get the large teapot. Then we need to chop up an onion. Erica followed the directions, digging out the biggest pot she could find. And what's next? We need to peel some garlic cloves and mince them. Then chop a couple of carrots and stalks of celery and mince the tomatoes. Once Erica had done those things, Doris continued. Now drain the bean, but leave a little juice behind. Then chop the parsley, then need some broth and pasta too. Doris, what about the sausages? Well done, Erica. I just wanted to see if you remembered. Doris guided Erica through the rest of the steps and they were just finishing up when Paolo walked through the door holding a bottle of wine. What are you making, Erica? He asked. It looks great. Pasta fagioli. I will be done in a few minutes and we can eat outside. I can't believe what I'm seeing, he teased Erica in the kitchen with an apron on. Who would have thought? Who would have ever thought? Erica put her hands on the hips and find a stern face. He smiled. I'll take the bottle outside. Doris set the table and Erica followed with the pasta fagioli. She added a splash of vinegar and Paolo watched. I see you know your grandfather's secret ingredients, he said, smiling. And Erica said, yes. So, Paolo, what wine did you bring for dinner tonight with my first prepared meal? I bought a Brunello. This wine is full-bodied, fruit-forward, and with a long finish. It should go perfectly with dinner. As he opened the bottle, she thought he looked very handsome. He was all dressed up, and something else was different about him. Maybe he had a haircut. She couldn't help but wonder if maybe he liked her a little bit as well. At the moment it looked up at her, shall we see what kind of a cook you are? He lifted the bite and tried it, but gave no reaction. In fact, it looked as if he was frowning a bit. You don't like it? Erica said. Oh, I'm kidding around. I love it. I'm impressed. But it's probably beginner's luck. Oh, Paula, you're so mean. Erica tasted the dish and felt proud of what she had accomplished in the kitchen. Paula raised his glass and proposed a toast. To a newer Erica that cooks, do you like this wine? Yes, I do. It goes perfectly with the meal. You're right. If you want, you can go to Brunello Montalcino and do some tastings. It's only 6 kilometers south of Siena. It's another region of Tuscany, and Brunello's red wines are also DOCG. What does that mean? It stands for Denominazione di Origine Controllato e Garantita. In English, it's the denomination of controlled and guaranteed origin. The Brunello's grapes are also 100% Sangiovese, but they taste a lot different than ours here. How many kinds of Sangiovese are there? Erica asked. Paula replied, oh my God, he says around more than 48. If you want, you can go for a day trip and visit the top 10 wineries. That would be wonderful. Well, the next day, the thoughts in Erica. Erica took Todd and James to the table that was set with pretty lemon patterned ceramic plates. Here we are with everything that Tuscany and my garden has to offer. Fresh mozzarella with tomatoes and basil, fresh from the garden. Cucumber salad with oregano, marinated with a little yogurt and our own olive oil. And some local prosciutto, several cheeses, a zucchini frittata, bread and parmesan. Todd was effusive. Darling, I want to marry you and move in here. No wonder you love it here. This is simple paradise. Everything is done with so much taste. The stone walls with the climbing roses, the terracotta tiles. He looked up. James, look at the angel sitting on each corner of the roof. Erica tilted her head. You know, Todd, I never noticed them before. Darling, that was the first thing I saw. Why don't you guys go to the back? I'll go get the Prosecco. Todd and James walked around the back patio, and when Erica found them, they stood taking in the view of the vineyards and the olive trees that lay in front of them. Oh my God, Todd said, I have died and gone to heaven. Oh, Todd, you're so dramatic, Erica said, who was bringing 3 glasses and a bottle of the sparkling wine. But that was exactly what I thought too when I first came here. Todd was still admiring the view. James, look at the roses and the lavender. This part looks like an English garden. And are those rosemary hedges? Erica nodded, yes. Who planted those? Oh, I believe my grandfather did. She handed him the glasses of wine with the Prosecco and said, Salute. Erica, to you. Let's go eat. The afternoon passed quickly as they sipped their wines and leaned back in their chairs to savor the view of the Tuscan rolling hills. Erica, James said, you have a jewel here. No wonder you look the way you do now. You bloomed like the red rose over there. She took a deep breath. I thought I had the perfect life in New York, but fate had something different in mind for me. I fall in love with this place and what it has to offer. I wake up in the morning happy to get up. I hated Mondays in New York, even though I liked what I did. I welcome the challenges here. Paul is teaching me all about the winemaking, and the longer I'm here, the more I appreciate the lifestyle and what my grandfather did. I get why he added this clause to this will. He wanted me to know about my roots. I keep finding things in the office, pictures, old documents, even left handwritten letters for me. It's amazing, but also strange at the same time. Now I'm here, where he wanted me to be, and it's relaxing and rewarding. I smile and laugh like I haven't done for a long time. No one tells me what to do, how to dress, how to wear my hair. No one puts me down. It makes me completely rethink my life before. Just at that moment, Paula comes around the corner. Bonjour, everyone. Erica introduced me. This is Paula, my right-hand man and manager of the properties. As they says, the newcomer, Todd and James, exchanged a sly look that clearly meant, not bad looking. Erica worried he might notice gesture to Paolo. Come, have a glass of wine with us. Todd, the champion, Erica just told us how helpful you have been and how much she loves it here. Oh, she did, Paolo said as he sat down and put himself a glass of wine. And she also told us how much she's learning from you, James said. Paolo's eyes met Erica for a second. He held up the glass. Cheers, everyone, and benvenuti.
Ah, well done.
I hope that's okay.
It's great. It's really lovely. Oh. It's lovely to hear an author read their work. And
as I said, yeah, but reading out loud is so weird.
It's hard to do, I know.
And reading your own words. Yeah.
Yeah, I've discovered that over the process of this podcast. So I absolutely know what you're talking about because it takes practice. I know that. And
it does.
Yeah.
I think from now on, I'm going to go and train every day for 30 minutes to read out loud to myself, to the roses out there.
Read to the roses.
Yeah. Read to the roses.
Absolutely. Gudrun, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Oh, Michelle, it was a pleasure. I hope I answered everything the proper way and that the listeners get a part of the feeling of what Italy has to offer. And it is a paradise on earth. It's not only the food and the people, but the rolling hills, the lands, and everything that comes together. And I also think that there's always love lingering in the air in Italy. And it doesn't matter from what country you come. And as far as I know, Italy is the number one travel destination at the moment. So I understand that a lot of people want to come and visit Italy, what it has to offer, the ancient cities. And even my house here is 1,000 years old. Lebanon is 1,500 years old. If the walls could tell you stories, you know, that would be amazing. And yeah, it's just like all of the roads, some of our roads in Tuscany are still the Strada Bianca, the right road, they're not safe, but they're main roads that connect with, you know, parts of Siena to Rada, for instance. And you all live still a traditional life, I believe. Nothing is very hectic here. Everything goes slow. Piano, piano, domani, domani. So when you come here, you need to take a rest. You need to take a breathe in and a breathe out and say, okay, now my body relax. I enjoy a glass of wine. Go for a walk. Go for a swim. You know, drive around the rolling hills of Chianti in Tuscany and eat the great food that they have. Very simple. And you can eat how much you want to. You don't gain any weight. This is the funny part.
Yeah. Yes.
I think the air that's digested for you.
The quality of the food is there, isn't it? And it's a part of the culture. And
wow.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Butter, everything is with olive oil. And everything is fresh. Nothing comes out of the refrigerator. You know, out of the freezer, everything is fresh, especially during the summertime. Yeah. I mean, when us, our chef in the evening at 5 o'clock, he goes down to the garden. They also have a garden over in Lebanana with his little basket. He picks the tomatoes, the melanzane, the eggplant, whatever he finds, takes the rosemary, the sage, the basil, and he walks up. And the people they're sitting at the pool and like watching the sky, you know, picking up all the vegetables. And then in the evening, they eat it. The tomato here, in the States, I don't even eat a tomato. The tomatoes here, they are so luscious and so sweet. It's like when you bite in, wow, it's an explosion in the mouth. And everything else that comes around. Yeah. Tonight, I'm going to go and make ravioli with olive oil and with sage. And you just take the sage out of the garden and you put it in your frying pan. You boil the pasta for a little bit, and then you put the raviolis in there, you know. And I also put a little bit of white wine as well with it, just to give it a bit of a nice flavor. I can't wait for my food. I cannot wait to eat.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Ah, piano, piano. Mm-hmm. Domani, domani. I think, yeah. I need to come to Tuscany now.
Yep. I think so too.
Tuscany's on the radar.
You know,
yeah.
Michelle, there's one thing, there was one poem that when I was very, very sad that my mother gave me, and she hung it up in my garden. And it's a poem from Hans Christian Andersen. And it reads, "A butterfly once said, living alone is not enough. One must have freedom, sunshine, and a little bit of flower. And from that moment on, I live like this. I see the sunshine, I see the flowers, I breathe in the air, and I say thank you when I wake up, and I say thank you when I go to bed. So life is worth living for, and never give up. Everything is possible in life.
It is. Thank you, Gudrun. That was a beautiful note to end on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.